list of announcements for you this morning. There's a children's fellowship meeting for all of the children's fellowship teachers and helpers at 12:45 today. And I imagine they all know where that is. So 12:45 today, don't forget. And then leaders, there's a leaders meeting tomorrow evening at 7:30 here at the Fellowship Center.
Announcement. I asked Wayne if I could do it because there's so many details in it. It would take a whole sheet of paper. He'd have to read to you probably. But this is something just last minute. This coming Saturday night, we're going to do a bonfire out here and some music and all that kind of stuff. And we're really still putting the details together. But basically, I think Brian and Holly, if people show up between 7 and 7:30, is that good? Yes, Brian says. So we're going to just, you know, what you want to do for sure is, unless you like sitting on wet grass, bring some chairs or bring a blanket or something like that to sit on. We're going to have various musical extravaganzas. I saw some video this week of Cliff and Ken doing some things I'd never heard before. I'm not sure if they're going to be doing those at the bonfire or not. We'll find out. We do have some old friends of ours from the West Coast, Don and Barbie Buckingham, who some of you may know. They're coming to visit our church with their 1,172 kids, all jammed into a bus like the Partridge Family. And they're going to be playing and singing some as well and enjoying the fellowship with us. So it's just going to be kind of, you like to show up and hang out with the believers on a Saturday night, this coming Saturday. Show up between 7 and 7:30, bring some chairs, something to sit on. Please park up in the parking lot. You know, that means you've got to carry stuff down. If some of you are unable to do that, we're going to have a couple of shuttles, right, Brian? Which is probably Brian in a van driving you up and down the hill. But if you need that, we'll take care of you. But rather than get everybody's vehicles down in the floodplain there, we'll walk down or shuttle down. You leaders, we're going to probably talk tomorrow night about snacks and things like that, because what's a bonfire without snacks, right? Got to have snacks. So we will figure that out. But anyway, that's Saturday night. If you'd like to come, between 7 and 7:30. And I think that's it, Wayne. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Want to sing another song? Hannah Burke is going to share God's word with us this morning. And before she does that, we'll sing number 90. Number 90, Unafraid.
Thank you, guys. You can sit down. I'm really excited to be able to share the word this morning. It's an amazing privilege, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to do it. This morning, we're going to start in Joshua. And if you want to turn to Joshua chapter 24. And it's Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, if anybody's not sure. Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit, real briefly, before we get into this, about what's going on at this point in time. You guys know that Joshua was kind of the guy in charge after Moses of the children of Israel. And his big job, we're going to look a little bit more at him today, his big job was really to bring the children of Israel into the promised land. Moses brought them out of Egypt, and they wandered around in the wilderness. And Joshua was supposed to bring them in and then help appoint the lands that were going to be everybody's individual place in that promised land once they got there. And towards the end of Joshua's life and ministry, there's a statement that's made, and it's a great statement. It's a commitment on Joshua's part that is pretty significant, and he's asking for a response from the children of Israel that's equally as significant. In 24:15, it says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And the thing I want to point out, and the thing we're going to look at in Joshua's life today, is that this commitment was wonderful and it was amazing, but it didn't stand alone. It was able to be made because of a series of decisions that Joshua made, a series of times in his life when he chose to believe the word. You know, if he hadn't done that, he never would have been in a position to lead the children of Israel to begin with. He never would have seen God's hand of faithfulness in his life. He never would have been confident enough to say that whatever you, my nation, my people do, I'm going to choose and my house is going to choose to serve the Lord. That confident, that type of grand statement, that type of absolute commitment in one moment doesn't come all by itself. It comes from a series of choices, a series of times when we as men and women can believe the word like he did. If you want to turn to Exodus chapter 17. When I was looking at this, I wanted to see the first time that Joshua really came up in the word. And it's a really long time before he starts to do much of anything. In Exodus chapter 17, verse 8, it says, "Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed, and when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly pour out the remembrance of Amalek, the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. For he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So what we see here is a really, really long time before the children of Israel are entering into the promised land, before Moses is dying, before all of these things have happened. Joshua's faithful. He's given a job to do, and he does it. His life didn't even start with Joshua 1 and some of the huge things that some of you are familiar with from that. It started way before that. His commitment to God started way before that. It even started before he and Caleb went into the promised land and said, ooh, it's good. His commitment to God, his faithfulness to God, his believing, began a long time before that. If you turn to Exodus 24. Okay, I'm going to talk about the situation, and then we're going to read some stuff. You guys know how Moses got the law, right? The first time? he went up to Mount Horeb and God gave it to him. And do you guys remember what happened while he was up there? The children of Israel were like, he's gone. It's been a really long time. We need an idol. So they made a calf of gold. What I had never picked up on until I was looking at this a couple weeks ago was that Joshua was with him. He went with Moses to the mountain. And he wasn't part of the calf thing. It's really significant noting some of these things. Anyway, so we're going to read that. In Exodus 24, verse 12, it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give thee tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written that thou mayest teach them. And Moses rose up and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the mount of God. And he said unto the elders, tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur, whatever, are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them. And Moses went up into the mount, and a cloud covered the mount." And he's up there for a while. And the next couple chapters talk about the law and the covenants and what God said. And if you turn to chapter 32, verse 1, it says, "And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what it's become of him." So that's what I talked about before. He was gone a while, and they were like, we don't know where he went. We don't know what's going on. Make us some gods. And Aaron did, and there were some consequences to that. God told Moses what was going on, and Moses and Joshua came down, and Joshua makes a comment about, it sounds like a war, and it's not, it's them singing. And God's very angry, and he initially, we're going to read here in 33, he says, I'm going to send an angel to go with you. I'm not going to go with you anymore, because if I'm with you guys, I'm going to kill you all. And so, you know, that obviously is taken care of, but here in chapter 33, we're going to read a couple verses. Verse 1, it says, this is after they came back down, and after it's, we'll read verse 35 of chapter 2. It says, "And the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made." So there were some consequences. And then in 33 verse 1 it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, depart and go up hence, thou and the people which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, unto thy seed will I give it. And I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. For I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. And when the people heard these evil tidings, they mourned, and no man did put on him his ornaments. For the Lord had said unto Moses, say unto the children of Israel, ye are a stiff-necked people. I will come up into the midst of thee in a moment and consume thee. Therefore now put off thy ornaments from thee, that I may know what to do unto thee." If you're not real familiar with the whole history of God's deliverance for this people, this may seem a little, they made one mistake and he's so angry. It was a big deal that they would choose to worship an idol above the living God. And beyond that, above a God who had continually proved himself good unto them, who had taken care of them time and time again. And Moses is gone for a little while and they rebel in the most basic of ways against God and turn to idols. So it is a big thing, and there are some serious consequences to that. If you want to know more about it, read that part of the word a little more, and you'll see that it's a very big deal, and God's response is in no way out of balance with their sin. In verse 7, "And Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it without the camp, afar off from the camp, and called it the tabernacle of the congregation." And the tabernacle is the place where God met with his people. It's where he was in the camp. So they took the tabernacle, and Lisa knows all about the tabernacle. They put it way outside the camp, and that's where people would have to go to meet with God. And that's where Moses went. "And it came to pass when Moses went out unto the tabernacle that all the people rose up and stood, every man at his tent door, and looked after Moses until he was gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, And all the people rose up and worshipped, every man in his tent door. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. Isn't that amazing? He was there. He was a part of Moses' life and ministry to the extent that he was there when God spoke to Moses face to face. And he stayed at the tabernacle after that. The significance of that is huge. Recognizing again the believing this man had established as a pattern in his life, in situations and circumstances, not just at, you know, that great moment of commitment we put on things on the wall, but throughout his life he trusted God. Throughout his life he believed the word. If you turn to Numbers 14. So before what we're going to read, this is when Moses sent the 12 spies into the land that God had promised, and 10 of them came back and were like, we're scared, there's big giants, and it's awful, and they're going to kill us. And Joshua and Caleb both said, no, they're not. And you'll see their response here, it's really cool. But that's the context here, is they've come back, and the 10 have already given their report, and now there's a little dialogue. And all the congregation, in verse 1 of 14, lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore, or why, has the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord. Neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us, fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. So you see, despite the response, and, you know, it's funny if you think about it. You can almost see it like a movie, you know. God's done so much. He's done so much. And Moses has done so much to help them get to a point where they can believe and they can see this and it'll be amazing. And they want to go back to Egypt again. You know, so it's a dramatic thing. But again, seeing Joshua's believing, he sees the circumstances in the land like everybody else did. There's big warlike towns and nations and armies. And there's Israel with their women and their children, and they were slaves, and, you know, and he sees that that's the case, but who's going to take care of them? Who's going to bring it to pass? God. So, again, the believing there. The consequence of this, or the result of this, is that all of the children of Israel that are alive at this point in time are going to wander and die in the wilderness, and their children are going to go in, with two exceptions, Joshua and Caleb. And if you turn to Hebrews chapter 3, in verse 16 of Hebrews 3, talking about the children of Israel, for some, when they had heard, did provoke, howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believe not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. So again, the contrast here, that Israel didn't enter in because of unbelief, and Joshua and Caleb did the opposite of that. They believed. And evidence, again, that in the Word, this man who was later to do so much for Israel, and we'll look at some of that, had a pattern, had a history of believing God despite circumstances. If you turn to Numbers 32, and in Numbers 32, verse 10, this is like a little recap. Something else is going on, and Moses is reminding them of some other things as this other situation is happening. In verse 10, it says, "And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord." Again, a recognition that this was a man who wholly followed the Lord. In Numbers 27, in verse 12, it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, get thee up into this Mount Abarim, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou also shalt be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was gathered. For ye rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes, that is the water of Meribah and Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin." So Moses, at this point, you know, knows he's not going into the promised land. He gets to go up and see it, but he doesn't get to go in. "And Moses spake unto the Lord, saying, let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep which have no shepherd. And the Lord said unto Moses, take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay thine hand upon him, and set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. And thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel for him after the judgment of Urim before the Lord. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. And he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and he laid his hands upon him and gave him a charge as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses." So again, you know, this was a man who'd proven himself, who continually chose to believe. And here it says that he's a man who, in whom is the Spirit. You know, so again, there's some faithfulness there. There's some believing. There's a series of choices that led up to the declaration we started with in Joshua 24. We're going to look at a few more of those. If you turn to Joshua chapter 1. And in Joshua 1, verse 1, it says, "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness, and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. What a promise. Isn't that great? How was God with Moses? Did he ever fail him? Consider, if you're familiar with it, the amazing things that were done with Moses. You know, at the very least, God talked to him face to face. We read that. That's amazing. And Joshua, at the beginning of, really, this is the beginning of his ministry, his oversight of the children of Israel. He has this kind of a promise. Amazing. And as we go on, recognize that he has words to believe, lots of words to believe. And he also has a promise to him specifically that God will be there to provide what he needs, to be his strength, to take care of things the way he did with Moses. Okay. In verse 6, be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law, which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have I not commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Not really, you know, necessarily the point of where we're going, but it's a good thing to remember that this was a promise to a servant and that God does no less for us. You know, as we read, recognizing the mighty things that God brings to pass, the miraculous things, the strength of his arm that he manifests practically for Joshua and the children of Israel is such a small thing to what he's done for us in Christ. The confidence that Joshua can have in God's ability to back up his word is based upon things he's seen. We have spirit. We have deliverance. We have Christ. Our confidence can be based on something much more than that. We can have a relationship with God to talk to and to reassure us. So the believing that Joshua had, the things that come to pass because of that, is in no way out of our grasp. It's less than what we can have. It's less than what we can do. Okay? If you turn to, I'm going to summarize. I'm not going to read a lot of this stuff. Some of the things that happen following this are mind-boggling. You know, a river parts, a large river. Have you guys seen, like, the Olentangy? It's not that big of a river. It's a little river. If you had a box and some people and they walked and God said, step on it and it'll part, and all of you can pass through, and the water stood up on a heap on either side, wouldn't that be pretty startling? Yeah. Okay. God brought that to pass for them. Jericho. You guys know about Jericho? I work with the Children's Fellowship. The 3 to 5-year-olds love that story because they get to knock things down. but in the Bible, God knocked down the walls of the city. They weren't like garden walls. You guys know how the old cities were? Has anybody ever seen like the battlements and the castles in Europe with the walls that were tall and wide, and city walls were amazing. That was their first defense. They were taller than a person. They were taller than a building most of the time. They were really hard to get through, and they weren't flimsy. They were big, thick, strong, tall walls. And they walked around the walls, the children of Israel did, the way God said to, and the walls fell down. And they went in and took the city. You know, what an amazing thing. And what believing it would take as a man leading people to go off of a word God told you, let's march around the city and watch the walls fall. You know, it's a dynamic thing. It's a huge thing. It's a great evidence to the senses of the power of God. And it happening at all started and in a lot of ways was contingent on that believing of that one man to do what God said with the children of Israel. There's evidence as you go through, there's nation after nation, huge nations, fierce nations. You know, the spies, when they went into Canaan in the beginning, to the promised land, weren't lying about the giants and the fierce armies and the things that were stronger than them and bigger than them. They were stronger and bigger than the children of Israel. The children of Israel weren't like a warrior-like nation. They'd spent years as slaves. You know, it's not like they had this great skill with weapons or you know, fierce archers. They were just some people who made some bricks, and they happened to be God's people. You know, so the things that happened, the things God brought to pass, were enormous. And it happened in time and again. A few times it didn't, because they didn't obey or they didn't believe. But most of the time it did. One of the cool things, if you turn to Joshua chapter 10, so this is in the middle of a battle, and they're killing a lot of people. And in verse 12 of chapter 10, it says, "Then spake Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and hasted not to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel." So they couldn't finish their vengeance upon their enemies in time. It was night. So Joshua told God to make it be day longer and to keep the sun here and the moon where it was so that they could finish what they wanted to do. And God did it. You know, again, what believing does it take to do something like that? And it's not like he did it in a closet. He did it in front of a nation that he was responsible for. It's a big deal. If you turn to Joshua 11, in verse 15, it says, this is kind of a summary of what's happened in the first 11 chapters here. It says, "As the Lord commanded Moses his servant, so did Moses command Joshua, and so did Joshua. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses." And down in verse 23, "So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land rested from war." Turn to chapter 23. That alone, what believing in obedience as the ruler of a country, following Moses, you know, who's seen God like that, to do what was instructed the leader who came before you and no more, but to do it all and to do it with that kind of believing. And he did. In chapter 23, in verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass a long time after that the Lord had given rest unto Israel from all their enemies round about, that Joshua waxed old and stricken in age. And Joshua called for all Israel and for their elders and for their heads and for their judges and for their officers and said unto them, I am old and stricken in age." It's a good way to start. "And ye have seen all that the Lord your God has done unto all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he that has fought for you." Again, not our topic, but just think about that. Who did he fight for? Israel. Was Israel all that great? No. They weren't righteous except by sacrifices according to the law. You know, they weren't necessarily faithful to God much. Even at this time, they had periods of unfaithfulness. You know, we saw that with Joshua and Moses when they worshipped idols. It's going to come up in chapter 24. I don't know that we're going to read it that much, but that they'd already done some of those things and taken the idols of some of the countries they were in. And yet, God continued to care for them. God fought for them. in what they faced. It's significant. You think about you and me, and how good are we? On our own, not so much. In what Jesus Christ has done, completely. God won't do any less for us than he did for them. But like for them, it is contingent upon believing. Okay. In verse 4, "Behold, I have divided unto you by lot these nations that remain, to be an inheritance for your tribes, from Jordan, with all the nations that I have cut off, even unto the great sea westward. And the Lord your God, he shall expel them from before you, and drive them from out of your sight, and you shall possess their land as the Lord your God hath promised unto you." So they haven't taken the whole land yet. They've taken as much as he was able to take. He's really old. And the rest of the land, according to what God told Joshua, he portioned out to them and said, okay, so like Judah, you're going to take these ones, and Benjamin, you're going to take these ones, and this is the land that's settled already that we've taken. The rest of them, it's your job to drive those nations out. Make sense? Okay. And really, whose job was it? God's, because he promised. So he shall expel them from before you and drive them from out of your sight, and you shall possess their land as the Lord your God has promised unto you. Be ye therefore very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that ye turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left, that ye come not among these nations, these that remain among you, neither make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause to swear by them, neither serve them, nor bow yourselves unto them, but cleave unto the Lord your God, as ye have done unto this day. For the Lord hath driven out from before you great nations and strong. But as for you, no man hath been able to stand before you unto this day. One man of you shall chase 1,000, for the Lord your God, he it is that fighteth for you, as he hath promised you. Take good heed, therefore, unto yourselves, that that you love the Lord your God. Okay. And he goes on and talks a little bit more. If you turn to chapter 24, it's really at the end of this, and then Joshua bringing all the tribes to him and talking to them, and in chapter 24, really reminding them of the deliverance of God. So that when we get down to, you know, what we started with, we're going to start in verse 13 and read a little bit. It's in the context of the deliverance of God that he's challenging them to serve God and love him and not other gods. In verse 13, "And I have given you a land for which ye did not labor, and cities which ye built not, and ye dwell in them. Of the vineyards and olive yards which ye planted not do ye eat. Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve him in sincerity and in truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And the people answered and said, "God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods." Yay, they did the right thing. It's great. If you go down to verse 29, it says, "And it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-serah, which is in Mount Ephraim, on the north side of the hill of Gaash. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel." So that's pretty significant, you know, that Israel did that as well. They too had seen God deliver. They too had seen that believing him was effective, and they too made that commitment to serve him. And it lasted for a while. You know, it may not seem like long to us, but have we seen people really believe the word for more than a generation or two? Not often. And that's about what they did here. They trusted God for that long before they had other problems. That's great. You know, that's remarkable. Again, recognizing Joshua here, that he could make this statement, he could make this commitment, and did make it, not in the first enthusiasm of love for God. Not like it talks about with the sower and the seed, right? That those who heard the word received it gladly. Not just in that initial joy at hearing the word, but after a lifetime of believing, he could make a statement like this. and know that it was true, know that it was good. Have it not just be something off the cuff, but something made with believing and with substance behind it. Turn to Romans 12. In Romans 12, verse 1, it says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. It's commendable, but not remarkable, that many of us have made commitments to God at one time or another, have seen the mercies of God, have seen what Jesus Christ has done, and been constrained by that to say, yeah, I want to live my life for you. But that commitment doesn't carry through for years unless there's a continual act of believing that's done. Deciding to not be conformed to the world is not a one-time action. It's a daily, moment-by-moment choice. Deciding to believe God isn't that decision, that commitment at that time in and of itself is great. We all have to reach that point, but that's not going to carry you through. That's not going to bear fruit. That's not going to see you in 20 years where you look back and you say, I used to be that. That's not who I am anymore. I've been transformed. I've so put off the old and put on the new in terms of the church, in terms of, you know, putting on the new man we've been called to and not choosing to walk according to the flesh anymore, that I no longer resemble that. That's not something that a one-time commitment is going to accomplish. That's something that a lifetime of choices will accomplish. You know, you want to have the confidence of a Joshua in making a statement like that and actually meaning it. It comes from decisions, daily decisions. Not grand gestures. Again, I want to read these two verses, and then we're going to read one other thing to close. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You know, there's great examples of this in the New Testament as well. The Apostle Paul. You know, he didn't always make right decisions, and there were consequences when he made wrong ones. But you see the faithfulness of the man. Day in and day out, over a lifetime, he chose to believe. He chose to trust God. He chose to trust the words of God over the evidence of his senses. He chose to place God's desires and God's will above his own. And there's a result to that. If you turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4, in verse 7 it says, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Again, you know, at the end of his life, that he could make a statement like that, that his estimation of his life was that he'd fought the good fight, he's finished his course, he'd kept the believing, or kept, you know, kept the faith of Jesus Christ and not strayed from that, is an amazing one. And it's not one that springs from, you know, when Jesus Christ appeared to him, he made that decision, and then everything was just good from there. It sprang from a lifetime of challenging decisions, of circumstances where, you know, maybe the flesh would have held sway, and instead he chose to believe the word. Another great example, that's Jesus Christ. You know, we are going to read one more thing. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. In verse 5, it says, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God." So he didn't snatch at authority. He didn't try to make himself equal with God, but instead made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in a fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. See, again, you know, Jesus Christ is much more to us than an example, but what an example of believing. You know, from the beginning of his life to the end of his life, he never strayed. He never did anything other than believe God. And at the end of his life, what a climactic event occurred, you know, that all of that built up to his death and resurrection. We can do the same. Maybe not, you know, die and get raised from the dead, but live a life that from beginning to end is believing God, believing God, believing God. When I wake up tomorrow, I can choose to believe the world or I can choose to believe what the Word says. I can make those decisions. And when I do, you know, like with Joshua, God's not going to be unfaithful. You know, so that 20 years down the road from now, my confidence in him, my commitment to him is greater, not less, than the first time I ever saw the mercies of God as real for me. That's only going to happen with daily, moment-by-moment choices to believe his word above my own thoughts, above the ways of the world, above my fears, above anything else. But it's possible. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
We're going to do number 111 to close out our fellowship this morning. Now, sharing that Hannah gave us this morning, that's a great thing all of us can take to God's word with a number of different people, whether it's Joshua or Moses or David or Paul, and look at from beginning to end of their lives and looking for those traits of how they believed God. And that's certainly something that we strive for. We strive to believe God in our lives as men like Joshua did. So we're going to sing number 111, I Believe It.
Wonderful week. God bless.